Good morning. It's Tuesday, July 30th. I'm Shmita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, record-setting blazes in the West, why the U.S. gymnastics abuse scandal isn't over, and the 60-year-old Olympian to watch. But first, President Biden is calling for big changes to the Supreme Court.
I have great respect for our institutions and the separation of powers laid out in our Constitution. But what's happening now is not consistent with that doctrine of separation of powers. Extremism is undermining the public confidence in the court's decisions.
Speaking from Austin, Texas, the president called for legislation that would fundamentally change how the highest court operates, including setting term limits and enforcing a code of ethics. Now, this might sound impossible in this political climate. After all, Biden is a lame duck president presiding over an incredibly divided country. But Politico notes there might be more public and political momentum for Supreme Court reform than you might think. Let's start with term limits. Biden is saying he wants to end lifetime appointments to the Supreme Court and set an 18-year term limit. And he points out the United States is the only major constitutional democracy that gives lifetime seats to its high court. In fact, in this country, some justices have served for more than 30 years, including Justice Thomas, who's now served for 32 years and counting. Recent polling from Fox News shows that more than 75% of Americans support the idea of 18-year term limits, including a large majority of Republicans. Biden's suggestion also includes letting future presidents nominate a new justice every 2 years. That would eliminate the chaos we saw when former President Barack Obama nominated Merrick Garland, only for the Republican-controlled Senate to block his appointment. It would also avoid a scenario where a president like Trump can appoint 3 justices, including one just weeks before losing the election. Biden's second proposal is to create an enforceable code of ethics for Supreme Court justices. As you'll likely remember, last year, ProPublica revealed that Justice Thomas had accepted gifts and luxury travel from a GOP megadonor without disclosing it, as required under federal law. Then, a few months ago, the New York Times reported that Justice Samuel Alito flew an inverted American flag outside his house after the 2020 election, and as the court was considering whether to take a case about the election.
Supreme Court's current ethics code is weak and, even more frightening, voluntary.
The court's current code of ethics was only adopted last year, and it's up to the justices to enforce it. Changing this is also a pretty popular idea, but the Associated Press notes figuring out how to enforce it would be thorny and complicated. Biden's third proposal is a constitutional amendment on presidential immunity. It comes after the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 along partisan lines that presidents are immune from prosecution for official acts while in office, a decision Biden strongly criticized in his speech.
This nation was founded on the principle there are no kings in America. Each of us is equal before the law. No one is above the law.
Of the 3 proposals, this is the least likely to go anywhere. That ruling is being used to protect Trump from some of the charges and convictions he's now facing. Plus, it's extremely hard to pass a constitutional amendment. It requires 2/3 of lawmakers in both the House and the Senate to agree, or 2/3 of the states. But it's not impossible. The last one that passed was the 27th Amendment in 1992. One idea not mentioned, expanding the court, a proposal some Democrats have been pushing for, but Biden has been pretty consistently against. Despite public support for some of Biden's ideas, Republicans have called these proposals dead on arrival. Here's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham on Face the Nation on Sunday.
They've tried to marginalize the court, destroy the Roberts Court. The Roberts Court has brought constitutional balance back to the court, and the liberals in this country want to pack the court. They want to destroy the court. So their initiatives coming from Biden will be dead on arrival in the Senate. They have no desire to make the court better. They're just trying to make it more liberal.
But as CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Nancy Cordes points out, it might not matter if they pass or not. We're in the months before a critical election, and these ideas could resonate with a lot of voters who are disillusioned with the court today.
If President Biden is out there on the road pushing for more guardrails when it comes to the Supreme Court, they argue that if the Republican opponents are out there pushing back, then it might look like they are arguing in favor of unethical behavior on the nation's highest court. So they're happy to have that fight, even if the policy at the end of the day doesn't go anywhere anytime soon.
Vice President and presumptive Democratic nominee Kamala Harris has endorsed these proposals and says she'll be trying to sell them to voters on the campaign trail. There's a fire raging so big and so intensely that you can see the smoke clearly from space. I'm talking about the Park Fire in California, one of the largest wildfires in the state's history. Experts believe it could continue to burn for several more weeks, potentially into the fall. The San Francisco Chronicle has reporting on how the Park Fire got so bad so quickly. Local police have charged a man from Chico with arson. He was seen pushing a car that was on fire down a ravine into the bone-dry landscape. The fire quickly spread, according to witnesses at a nearby swimming hole. Here's what one of them told the local CBS station in Sacramento.
And then I saw smoke come up from underneath the car, and I see flames sort of lick up on the passenger side of the car.
And it started spreading fast. For a sense of scale, it's burning roughly 4,000 football fields an hour. And part of that has to do with weather conditions. California has gotten more rain over the last 2 years than usual, and it saw fewer wildfires, so more vegetation was able to grow. Then this summer came the record-breaking heat, which completely dried out all of that plant life and turned it into ideal tinder. It's also been particularly windy. That fire is now threatening neighborhoods that are still recovering from previous disasters. ABC spoke to Jen Robbins, who lost everything in the big California fire of 2018, the Camp Fire. She had to leave everything behind and rebuild. Now she's terrified that history could repeat itself.
I don't know how I was able to drive here, but I was shaking so hard and just crying. When I arrived here, I just got out of the vehicle and collapsed and was throwing up.
She said it comes with a lot of complicated emotions.
Not knowing if the home we built is existing, not knowing if my livelihood of these farm animals, if they're even alive, you know? I mean, there's a lot of guilt, there's a lot of pain.
As we know by now, climate change is supercharging wildfires. In a study released last year, researchers looked at data from 1971 to 2021, and they learned that human actions contributing to climate change are making California wildfires bigger, deadlier, and more destructive. A warning that this next story involves details of abuse. Today, as many Americans will be cheering on the U.S. women's gymnastics team at the Olympics, behind the scenes, USA Gymnastics is still reeling from a toxic and abusive culture it hasn't been able to shake. A few years ago, more than 100 gymnasts accused Larry Nassar, the team's former doctor, of sexual abuse going back years. After he was convicted, Congress created an independent group to investigate misconduct across Olympic sports, called the U.S. Center for Safe Sport. They've made meaningful progress around preventing and reporting sexual abuse. But the Washington Post found Safe Sport is still leaving hundreds of young gymnasts vulnerable to working with coaches who've been accused of other serious misconduct.
Over and over again, these allegations of physical and emotional abuse, nothing happened.
That's Washington Post reporter Molly Hensley Clancy. The Post interviewed dozens of gymnasts, parents, and gymnastics officials for this investigation and reviewed court records, police reports, and medical records. One coach she told us about is Arthur Akopian. He was a longtime coach for the USA women's national team, and he's coached several Olympians, including gold medalist Michaela Maroney. 10 former gymnasts told the Post that Akopian emotionally and physically abused them or their teammates when they were kids.
They were very young, 10, 11 years old. The allegations involved slapping an 11-year-old girl across the face, dragging an 11-year-old girl by the back of her neck and her arm, leaving bruises, and very frequently throwing girls to the ground when they made mistakes when they were doing their gymnastics routines.
Sydney Frieden was coached by Akopian, and in 2020, she accused him of abusing her when she was young. Here's how the Washington Post described what she went through.
She was sort of describing being a 9-year-old girl in this gym. You're there for 6 hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week. And she said, just imagine going in and your coach does something to hurt you. He throws you, he grabs you, he pinches you. And then you have 5 more hours where you are in this room with him. You cannot leave. You have to do everything he says. You're terrified of doing this move on the balance beam that you might fall on, and you have no choice.
Akopian declined to comment to the Post and has denied all the allegations against him, and he's still coaching today. Hensley Clancy told us Safe Sport has investigated at least 6 coaches of recent U.S. Olympians or alternates over allegations of emotional and physical abuse, as well as several other coaches of elite gymnasts. But cases stay open for years.
There's a lot of reasons that Safe Sport has fallen short. I think they're understaffed. They don't necessarily have the funding. And sometimes these emotional and physical abuse allegations are very difficult to go back and investigate. You know, it's not easy to go back and prove that this broke the rules of the sport at the time.
A common theme for many of the victims is their age, that so much of this happened when they were so young.
They didn't have choice. They didn't have agency. They didn't have the ability to say no to the coaches and to any other adults. And so what they told me was this was sending a message that, you know, winning came at all costs.
Safe Sport says it's making changes in how it investigates cases in an effort to protect more of the current athletes. But ultimately, the Post's reporting shows there's still so much work to be done to protect the young people who give up everything to be on the world stage. Before we let you go, a few other stories that'll stick with you in the Apple News app. Let's start with the Olympics. The men's gymnastics team broke a 16-year drought when they secured a bronze medal in yesterday's team competition. The U.S. women's basketball team dominated in their first game against Japan. And the Wall Street Journal has the story of one of the oldest athletes at the Olympics, table tennis superstar Ni Xia Lian. She's 61 years old, and this is her 6th Olympics. Technically, there are older Olympians, but as the journal notes, she is the oldest Olympian who doesn't ride a horse. Ni grew up in China, but moved to Luxembourg, where she's become sort of a celebrity. She was even their flag bearer in the opening ceremonies. She won her first match to an opponent half her age over the weekend, and she seems like she's got a pretty good sense of humor. When asked about her age, she likes to say, "Well, I'm younger today than I will be tomorrow." Meanwhile, in the United States, there's an interesting, kind of opposite trend emerging in professional soccer. The men's and women's soccer leagues have signed on some of the youngest players ever. At 14 years old, McKenna Whitman debuted in her first National Women's Soccer League match this weekend. She's believed to be the youngest player in any North American professional sports league since the 1970s. She also signed a deal with Nike, the youngest player in any sport ever to sign with a sneaker giant. Just a little older than Whitman is Kevin Sullivan. He made his debut for the Philadelphia Unions earlier this month, also at 14 years old.
This kid is ready. And Kevin Sullivan, the history maker, now enters this arena.
Now, the thing about being a child and having a job on a professional sports team is there are child labor laws. Sports teams need to follow them, but coaches can often find workarounds. For example, Whitman's team had to get a special permit from the state of New Jersey that allows her to work past 7 p.m. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. ProPublica and the New York Times Magazine teamed up to tell the story of a father sentenced to prison for allegedly harming his baby, even though what's known as shaken baby syndrome has mostly been debunked. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.